From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 8th day of April 2011. I'm Todd Gleason. Today we'll talk about the commodity markets and this morning's USDA World Agricultural Supply and Demand Estimates with Mike Zuzulo. He's at Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting in Lafayette, Indiana. We'll hear from Nick Paulson about a posting he and Gary Schnitke wrote for the Farm Doc Daily website on federal budget outlays and farm safety net programs. And as we close out the day, we'll get an update on the weekend weather forecast with Steve Hilberg from the Midwestern Regional Climate Center right here on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media.
This stock and commodity report on Illinois Public Media is made possible with support from Bates Commodities in Normal, providing clients with the latest market information based on research by ADM Investor Services and other independent sources. Bates Commodities can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at batescom.net.
In Chicago on this Friday afternoon, futures finished the day like this. The nearby May wheat contract at $7.97.5, 24 and a half cents, or rather a quarter cents higher. July at $8.32.25, 23 and a quarter higher. In the hard red, July futures finished at $9.43, that from Kansas City, up 9 and a quarter cents. May corn futures, $7.68, up 9. July at $7.74, 7 and 3 quarters higher. September at $7.11, up 9 cents. December 653, 8 and 3 quarters higher, and the March corn at 662 and a half, up a dime for the day. May soybeans 28 and 3 quarters higher at 1392 and a quarter. July at $14, 3 and 3 quarters, up 28 and a quarter. And the August contract at $14.04, 28 and a half higher. September $14 and a penny, up 28 and a half. November at $13.96, 30 and a half cents higher. May bean meal futures $3.57, 20 up $6.30. May soybean oil at $59.77, up $1.45. April feeder cattle today $118.82.5, down $1.07.5. June at $116.95, 70 cents lower on the afternoon. April feeders, those were live cattle. April feeders now $134.60, 52 and a half cents lower. The May contract there at $135.50, down 22 and a half. And April lean hogs today, $93.15 per 100 pounds, finished 40 cents higher. Lean hogs May contract $100.97.5, 52 and a half cents higher on the day. USDA released its numbers this morning. Corn figure for the ending stock stayed the same at 675. So did the soybeans at 140 million bushels for the carryout. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. Here's what the outside markets look like on the crude oil futures. They are moving sharply higher, up $112.52 a barrel now, $2.22 higher. Ethanol at 272 and 6 tenths, up 3 and 2 tenths. Natural gas at $4.04 and a tenth of a cent, down a penny and 6 tenths for the day. Heating oil or diesel fuel at $3.31 and a half, up a dime and 9 tenths. And gold futures at $14.90 higher, finished $1,473.40 an ounce. The Dow Jones Industrial Average at 12,339, just about 70 points lower, and the dollar at 75.05, down 0.53. The CRB index for the day at 368.70, up 4.2 on the afternoon. Here's what the weather forecast looks like for the Urbana-Champaign area. There is a hazardous weather outlook as issued by the National Weather Service. Isolated thunderstorms will develop, they say, late tonight. That in advance of a warm front that should lift northward through the southern part of Illinois. Severe weather not really anticipated. However, a few of those storms are probably capable of producing small hail, some gusty winds. On days 2 through 7, that's Saturday through Thursday of next week, the National Weather Service ISA says isolated thunderstorms will be possible tomorrow. The warm front arrives in the central part of Illinois. A few of those storms will be capable, again, of small hail, some gusty winds tomorrow. A vigorous storm system will bring a much better chance for thunderstorms Sunday night. There's a moderate risk that some of the storms that develop and move into central Illinois will become severe. Stay tuned, of course, to later core forecasts for updates on the potential there. And having a significant weather event, we'll take a more complete look at the agricultural weather forecast when we get to the bottom of this half hour. And we talk with Steve Hilberg. He's with the Midwestern Regional Climate Center.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a Friday afternoon. Mike Zuzdalo of Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting joins us from his Lafayette, Indiana office. Hi, Mike.
Hey there, Todd.
Are you tired?
I am. It's been a wild week this week. You know, it just seems like the news just keeps coming at you from every angle anymore.
Well, let's talk about the news that hit the marketplace this morning. And I want to know whether you thought it was bearish or bullish when you first saw it. USDA left the ending stocks for the year at 675, that despite the grain stocks report that was out last week. And they left soybean ending stocks for the nation at 140 million bushels. Wheat stocks were changed from 843 to 839, so they just dropped a few million bushels. I think that was feed wheat that has already happened at this point.
Right.
You think they were bearish when they came out, or did you just have no idea?
No, I think the corn market has lost its leadership quality to the upside at this point, unless we have planting delays. I think that's what USDA's report did to us today, because the market had factored in quite a bit lower carryover at this point, given the dollar rally from the stocks report level. For beans, I felt like the report was neutral at face value, but because no one had bought the beans after the stocks report or held onto their longs after the stocks report, it was mostly neutral, with the idea that maybe we could see some short covering if South American production wasn't that big. And it was pretty big, though. So I would say neutral with the short covering rally potential in beans is what my expectation was after the numbers. Then for wheat got transferred up to the leader to the upside, especially given that the USDA not only lowered production a little bit globally, but they also brought the U.S. ending stocks down below what I think traders were expecting. So I think given the timing and the seasonality of the markets right now, where you're getting in the middle of corn planting, you're getting into the hard beginning of corn planting, you're getting in the middle of the wheat joining and the wheat productive head filling stages right around the corner, I think seasonally as well, this report probably matches up with the idea that if corn's going to go on higher, it's probably going to need the wheat to help it, given the report numbers.
And is that because we're going to feed wheat? That's what USDA seems to think, right?
I think that's part of it. I think the other part of it is this. We have five countries that produce about 60% of the global wheat, the EU, China, India, the former Soviet states, and us. Three of those five, the EU, China, and us, are about 44%. And those three countries are having significant issues with weather and their winter wheat crop. And I think this is where probably if we're going to go on higher, it's going to be the futures market being an anticipatory market. We'll try and put that into the risk premium, put that in the futures market. If weather stays poor in those three major northern hemisphere growing regions, that should be enough to give the wheat the leadership to the upside. But certainly the lack of the carryover reduction in the corn also is another part of it, too, because that goes back to the wheat corn spread. That goes back to your feeding issue. We are starting to hear more about feeding in soft red wheat. USDA made a remark about that in today's report.
Right.
We're probably going to see some more information come out of the poultry areas of the southeast. It was about a month ago today that Wilmington Bulk bought that record large amount of Canadian feed wheat back in the middle of March. So if we don't change that wheat corn spread around, and it gained 15 and a quarter today alone, but if we don't change that around and get it back up above 60, 75 cents, we will continue to hurt corn feed.
Do we find any place that looked like it had decided to shrink up just a bit in corn usage numbers? For instance, what did feed usage do, and do we know much about those numbers?
Well, this is where the feed usage went down. The feed and residual column went down by 50, and it was mostly due to feed. And I think this is what puzzles the trade the most after today's report. There's still a lot of unanswered questions, because the residual number was supposed to be, especially after the stocks report, that residual number was supposed to be the one that should have come in bigger. USDA made no comments about that at all. So that's still a major piece of the puzzle. But I think at this point, because again, by the seasonal mindset of it, if we get corn safely planted, will the trade really care about the 2010 carryover that much if the new crop corn's in the ground? And I think that probably has to be weighed as well.
Hey, can I read you something that came from Darrell Good this morning, and I'll kind of read it slow so that folks can pick it up and you can write some of these numbers down, because it goes to what we're talking about. So broiler and chick placements are up, hog inventories up, cattle and feedlots are up, dairy cow numbers are up, feed use of corn, this is where you're going to start writing things down, in the first half of the year, writes Darrell to me this morning, was up 7% over use of last year. Second half use is projected to be down 13%, or down 224 million bushels. That's for corn. And then he says, last summer we fed 260 million bushels of wheat. That needs to increase by 200 million this summer. That's a big increase, I would think.
That is. And, you know, I just got done looking at the weekly numbers for the meat production, and we're still, on the cattle weights, we're still 11 pounds over last year at this time, and on hog weights, we're still 4 pounds over last year at this time. So I think, Todd, if you're in lambs, sheep and lambs are up 3 as well, and calves are up 3 to 4. So if you're going to get that second half feed reduction, I think you're going to have to start seeing it in some of these weekly total meat production sheets that USDA puts out. And I think that's where, if you're looking at a place where the hogs and cattle market are starting to feel the ouch and starting to feel the pain of higher corn and higher feed prices, I got to think that those weights are going to be one of the first things to start to drop, because historically that's how they react first. So it's an interesting statistic, because right now I don't think we're on that path yet.
Can I go down a little different path with you? And I don't have the number in front of me because I just didn't bring it in, but I think the cash price, the average cash season's cash price, narrowed 5 cents on both ends, and it's now, what, 520 to 545?
Yeah, I believe that's right.
I think I saw that. So that's the average season cash price. Of course, we're well below that at this point. So that's out of the farmer's hands, right? And now you've got it in somebody else's hands. Does that mean it's in the elevator? Is it further down the line at the processor? Is it more in the end user's hands? And is this the reason that maybe USDA is not so worried about the 675 carryout, that they, you know, much of this corn has been marketed at a far lower price?
Well, that may be. I think the only thing I could say to that is that, from what I've picked up in the last 2 to 3 weeks, is end users bought aggressively on that big break to the downside, and they bought aggressively again last week after the stocks report came out. So they are probably sitting fairly well going into pollination of corn. I would also say that what corn is left out there in the farmers' hands, a good portion of that will probably be let go of once those farmers get safely planted of the 11 crop. If I talk to producers that are still holding 10 crop, it's mainly because the idea that they don't want to let go until they safely plant this year's crop, because so much is at stake. But if they do get planted safely, there's probably a good chunk of corn coming in the next 30 to 45 days.
Do you pull any triggers on new crop sales this week?
No, we did 15% at 6:45, and I can't remember if that was last Friday. Maybe that might have been Monday.
I think it was Monday.
Yeah, it was Monday. You're right.
That's why I asked.
Yeah, 6:45, first 15% sale on cash sales. I'm still going to be looking to be at 30 to 35%, possibly as early by the end of this month, because one thing that really bothers me, two things actually, crude oil prices and bond yields, they're starting to really get ugly and get ouchy in my mind. And once I see the equities market start to get toppy and start to go lower, I think that's probably a good indicator that the grain market's probably going to have a tough time going much higher.
Anything else you wanted to make sure we talked about?
I think the other thing would be, we saw China and the European Central Bank both raise interest rates this week. And I think here again, we're starting to see the clock is ticking on the end of easy monetary policy. So that's something to really keep in the forefront of your mind as we deal with all these issues of demand and planting and supply here on the micro side.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Todd.
Mm-hmm. That is Mike Zuzulo. He's with Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting in Lafayette, Indiana. Joins us on the Closing Market Report on a Friday afternoon.
Support for the Closing Market Report comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of 5 new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
Yeah. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. Please do visit our website. The address is willag.org. That's willag.org. Don't forget, we'll post our Commodity Week program to the website by about 6 o'clock this evening. Our guest in studio with us today, Aaron Curtis, Bill Mayer, and Chuck Shelby. On the phone line, Ray Jenkins of Cargill in Iowa. Commodity Week. It's our weekly look at what happened in the world of agricultural commodities. Posted to, well, the website at willag.org before it airs on any of our radio station affiliates. Now, up next, we'll take a look at a recent posting to the Farm Doc Daily website. Nick Polson, ag economist, will be here to discuss an article on federal budget outlays. You and Gary Schnitke released on Farm Doc Daily a pretty interesting look at the size of the agricultural payments that come out of the federal budget, not only for agricultural payments, but for all of USDA, so that's the food and nutrition programs too. The first comparison you make is to other entitlement type programs, and what did you find?
When you take a look at the total overall federal budget, we looked at just 2009 as an example year, and in terms of actual expenditures, programs like Social Security and Defense comprise, you know, just under 20% of the budget, whereas all USDA programs are between, you know, 3 and 4% of total spending. And if you take a look at the Farm Safety Net, you know, a lot of the programs that are under fire in the popular press right now, crop insurance and commodity programs, those actually are less than 1%, or around 0.5% of the total federal budget. So, you know, cuts are expected, and they take a lot of heat in the press. But when you look at the overall budget, the amount that they can contribute to overall spending cuts and reducing the deficit is relatively small.
But of course, we're in the middle of very high commodity prices across the board for almost all commodities. And there is an argument made in the popular press in Washington, D.C., that that should be good enough to make the agricultural community work properly.
Yeah, and that's a tough argument to refute. So, like I said, I think the agricultural community is prepared to take some cuts. But again, we just wanted to kind of put things in perspective. A lot of times, billion-dollar amounts are thrown out when we're talking about ag programs, $9 billion for commodity programs, the $5 billion that we spend each year on direct payments. But again, we just wanted to, you know, make people realize that that is a relatively small piece, even though we are talking about billions of dollars of the amount that we spend federally, and also a relatively small amount compared to the level of cuts that we're looking at for fiscal year 2011 and future years.
How does it differ within the USDA budget? For instance, what does SNAP or the old food stamps program make up as compared to the farm payments or the safety net type programs?
That's another thing that was in our daily posting. So we looked at the last, I think back to 2008, the total spending on nutrition programs and consumer services within the USDA budget has increased from about $60 billion to, I want to say, $100 billion projected for, estimated for 2010, projected for 2011, whereas those commodity programs, again, are around $9 billion. Crop insurance is around a little over $7 billion projected for 2011.
You and Gary make an argument at the end of this particular document that it might not be that cuts need to be made in this program, particularly across the board, but rather that duplicative services or payments that are across each other might be more efficient, and it might be possible to take a look at that and see if you could make cuts but continue to service the population and smooth farm income for those years, no doubt, that will still come when farm income drops dramatically.
Right. I mean, I think rather than just looking at, you know, cutting direct payments or removing other commodity programs that we have, I think there are ways that we can make the overall suite of programs that we have available more efficient in terms of providing the same level of risk management benefits to producers while also spending less taxpayer dollars to do so. And that's something that we're going to be looking at, in some of the posts that we're going to be putting up in the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, it was great to ask about that. You did a nice little foreshadow, nice writing, told us, hey, come back because we're going to deal with this more. What kinds of things beyond what you've just told us will you be dealing with?
Yeah, so just to give you a little piece of that, we are going to look at, you know, kind of the impact of maybe cutting direct payments. We're also going to be looking at some of these efficiency issues in terms of the overlap between acre and crop insurance. So those are at least two of the things we're going to look at, and I think we're also going to do some more analysis too. So
Nick, thank you so very much.
Yep, thank you.
Nick Paulson, agricultural economist. He and Gary Schnitke penned an article for the Farm Doc Daily site. You can find it at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu.
Support comes from Stuart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. The firm develops strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information is available at www.stuart-peterson.com.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report on a Friday afternoon. Bruce Bostard of the Ludlow Co-op Elevator Company out of Ludlow, Illinois, joins us to take a look at the cash grain market. Thanks, Bruce, for taking the time with us. Look across the landscape. What are the most interesting numbers that you see?
Oh, I guess today's numbers will be interesting in the fact that we didn't change any bottom line numbers. We changed the mix around, and I think we'll have plenty to argue about that. And the bottom line, most interesting number is, are we going to be able to get the rationing done on corn? We're watching to show something slowing down, and I don't think we've seen it yet.
What's your bet?
We'll get there somehow, but I don't think we... there's no flat price number that you can give. In ethanol, everybody tries to come up with a flat price number, but it's a matrix. RBOB is 50 cents a gallon or so over what ethanol is, so blend credit or no blend credit, it makes sense to use as much ethanol as you can in the blend, so the price follows corn. It goes up and down with corn because there's plenty of spare capacity and what they can afford to pay for it.
And you don't think any other end users are slowing down either?
Not so far. I mean, the livestock numbers are out there so far, and it takes a while to slow that down. Export sales this week were slower, but 1 week doesn't make a trend. Last week we had a big number, so that is the one I think we'll have to watch for a little bit. That is easier to push a sale forward and get by, and that might be the first one to give.
If you had to guess, what's the next cash grain number that will pull corn out of the bin?
Oh, $8? We're $7.54 tonight. I mean, we came since April 1, our nearby corn bids come up 75 cents a bushel, and basis hasn't backed off a penny.
That is
a
lot of money.
So that's pretty impressive.
That is really impressive. Do you remember a time where that's...
No. No.
Even on a percentage basis?
And I was at a meeting yesterday, and there was a lot of head-shaking saying, I don't remember anything like that. In 08, we ran up, but the basis backed off. So that made you wonder. This year, when the basis is hanging in there, it makes you think the demand's for real.
Demand is for real. It's still coming. You don't see an end to it. All right. What's your bids for the day?
$7.54 on corn nearby, $6.19 on the new crop. Beans, $13.74 and $13.62.
I heard some awfully good bids from down the river. Is the river staying strong, too?
The river, as far as I know, has been staying strong. I heard some barges that were built last summer that were sitting at the Gulf with damage that are finally moving back upriver. So,
thank you so much.
Thank you.
Bruce Bostard is with the Ludlow Co-op Elevator Company. He's in Ludlow, Illinois. He joins us here on the Closing Market Report to take a look at the cash grain market on a Friday afternoon. Please do visit our website. The address is willag.org. That's willag.org. Starting tomorrow on Commodity Week, and for a good portion of the next week, I'll be asking you to do something in particular. That is to reach into your back pocket and help fund this programming. More on that, of course, coming up. But off of the website, you can visit that, willag.org. There's a big red button there. You can push it, too, and pledge your financial support to WILL and Ag Programming.
It's World Health Day and National Coffee Cake Day. The history of the coffee cake dates back to the ancient Egyptians. precursors of modern cakes were first baked in Europe sometime in the mid-17th century. On this day in agricultural history in 1727, Michael Addison was born. Addison was a French biologist who developed a system of plant classification based on physical characteristics. In 1860, Will Keith Kellogg was born. He founded the Battle Creek Toasted Corn Flake Company to manufacture cereals developed by his brother, John Harvey Kellogg. In 1869, David Fairchild was born. He supervised the introduction of over 20,000 exotic plants and varieties of established crops into the U.S., including alfalfa and soya beans. He managed the Foreign Seed and Introduction Program of USDA for more than two decades, and he was author of The World Was My Garden and Exploring for Plants. In 1884, E.H. Sutton, an African-American inventor from North Carolina, patented a cotton cultivator. And in 1948, the World Health Organization was established. The WHO has more than 190 member nations. Its mission is the attainment by all peoples of the highest possible level of health, with an emphasis on infectious diseases. And that's this day in agricultural history.
Listening to the Closing Market Report. It's a Friday afternoon. Steve Hilberg from the Midwestern Regional Climate Center, funded in part by NOAA, now joins us to take a look at the weather forecast. Good afternoon to you, Steve.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Well, we're in that time where we're finally changing over to spring. The grass is green. People can get into the field when it's not wet. What do you think is going to happen?
Well, probably should take advantage of the next 24 to 48 hours because it'll be warming up here. The clouds over central Illinois and northern Illinois right now are just ahead of a warm front that's slowly pushing northward and was partly responsible for the rain across the northern half of Illinois last night. And so once that moves north of here, that things should be in pretty nice shape for the weekend for the most part. And I say for the most part because by Sunday night, it appears we got a pretty strong weather system that'll be moving into the Midwest. The low's actually going to move from somewhere in Kansas up into Wisconsin with a strong trailing cold front. So it's a pretty powerful system, and it will likely result in a long line of thunderstorms all the way from Wisconsin down through Illinois and then actually down into Texas with some potential for some nasty severe weather closer to the low, which would likely be Iowa, parts of Wisconsin, maybe northwestern Illinois. It's a little early yet to pinpoint it exactly, but that's what it looks like right now.
I suppose the folks in Omaha and Texas would welcome even that kind of rainfall.
Yeah, it's going to be mostly eastern Texas as things get going. It's going to miss a lot of the wheat belt for that one. But that'll slowly pull out of here after the weekend, and we'll have a couple nice days after that until maybe about Thursday when another system will be back in here, and actually the prospects for more rain by next weekend. So we're in that time of year where we're getting a system through here about every 3 days or so and bring along with it a chance of rain. But I think we'll have some good dry days in between.
Pretty usual weather for this time of year. Anything unusual that we need to note today?
No, we just could use some more rain, but I think everybody rather prefer that they got crops in the ground first before we got too much more. Rain amounts were pretty healthy last night, anywhere from a half inch to an inch over the northern third to half of Illinois. So that was needed, and hopefully that will help.
All right. Thank you so much.
All right, Todd.
Steve Hilberg is with the Midwestern Regional Climate Center. He joins us here on the Closing Market Report. Happens on a Friday afternoon. Please do visit our website. You can hear Steve again there if you'd like at willag.org. We'll post what he has to say not long after we finish up with our program. We post everything, in fact, from our agricultural programming to WILLAG.org. from our pre-opening to our closing market report and our Commodity Week program, which airs on the radio station here, the home one, at 11:30 Saturday mornings for sure. You can listen to it there or off the website. Either one. We'll put it up by about 6 o'clock this evening. Our guest is Ray Jenkins this week. He's from Cargill. He runs the ethanol plant there in Eddyville, Iowa. Commodity Week, it is our weekly look at what happened in the world of agricultural commodities. We'll take up the USDA reports and how things lay out for the coming month and, well, the beginning of the planting season. Thanks for listening. This has been the Friday edition of the Closing Market Report. I'm Todd Gleason.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated in Lafayette, Indiana, Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois. Risk Management Commodities focuses on managing risk in today's complex and sophisticated commodities market. 866-837-9027.